Welcome to the Nourished Wrap podcast, hosted by two passionate clinical nutritionists whose mission is to educate, inspire, and empower people to lead a more nourishing life. Katie and Jessica value evidence-based practice, holistic healing approaches, and practical health advice, all while having fun along the way. We thank you for tuning in and hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back, everyone. So we're here for episode 3 of the Nourished Wrap. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm here with my co-host, Jess Chenny.
Yes. Hi, everyone.
And today we are actually joined by a special guest, which is super exciting. Our first guest for the show, a friend and a client of mine, Mr. Andy Steele. So thank you so much for joining us today, Andy.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks, Katie, for inviting me.
Our pleasure. So I guess to start off with, maybe you can just tell our listeners a little bit about you, your background, what you like to do for hobbies and that sort of thing, and then we'll dive into the crux of the episode.
So I'm a 64-year-old that's been running for many years and got into running marathons over many years and now into ultra events. And I've done ultra events for the last probably 8 or 10 years, and my body seems to cope well with those longer distances, and my mind seems to get into the right zone. So now that I'm retired, I can certainly spend a bit more time doing these things. And hobby-wise, I do a lot of work with prison chaplaincy work through the Salvation Army. So that's probably my main spare time exercise, and never run out of work in that area. So.
Excellent. And just for the benefit of our listeners, can you explain what an ultra event actually means?
Yeah, so look, a marathon is a 42.2-kilometre running event, and anything over 42.2 is really considered to be an ultra. So, I've run double marathons. Any cycling event that's sort of over 100 kilometres is considered to be ultra. So,
So tell us maybe what's sort of the most challenging event you've done up to this point?
Running-wise, I've run Comrades, which is an ultra running event in South Africa. It's been going 93 years this year. It's a 90K event that runs between Durban and Pietermaritzburg. 1 year is uphill, considered uphill, and the next year is downhill from Pietermaritzburg to Durban. And that was started after World War I, so that it could recreate the hardship and toughness that people walking off the fields went to war without a lot of knowledge and experience. But they wanted to recreate something that people in the community could do and understand the hardship that these guys had gone through. So, So it's got a lot of history. It's a huge event. I mean, you get 20,000 to 25,000. It's a sold-out event, and when you talk ultramarathons, long distance, that is considered to be one of the events.
The races. Certainly pretty important to our running club, that's for sure. So what we really wanted to talk to you about today is your next big event, which really takes what you've done so far to another level, the Uniguaja Challenge. So could you explain to us what that actually entails?
So the Uniguaja Challenge culminates on day 11 with the running of the Comrades event. The 10 days before are actually a ride with an international team of 12 people from Cape Town to Durban or Pietermaritzburg to the start of the run on day 11. So you spend 10 days covering 1,700 kilometres.
Wow.
It's an 18,500 metre climb, so it's two times Everest.
Wow.
In terms of the amount of climb.
Goodness.
So you're looking at 170 to 200 kilometre days every day for 10 days.
Yeah,
and probably 1,000 to 2,500 meters climb each day. So there's a huge amount of cycling, which was something I hadn't done. Now the event came about from a guy that had won Comrades in 1931, and in 1932 he went and ran it again. 1933 he couldn't afford the train fare to go from Cape Town to Pietermaritzburg to make the event, so he rode his bike.
Wow.
And then someone in South Africa, John McEnroe, picked up this event in 2011 and said, this we can't allow the determination and so on that went with Phil Marston-Smith doing this ride and run. And he ran Comrades in 1933 and came 10th.
Fantastic.
After
wow.
riding. And you can only start to imagine, one, what the bikes would have been like,
yeah.
What the roads would have been like, conditions.
What the country was like.
Nutrition.
Yeah,
nutrition.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you don't have gels, you don't have electrolytes. He would have been lucky to find, you know, a bit of ground to lie on and water to drink. So, it was incredibly tough. We have it a lot easier. There's a team of 12, as I say, selected from around the world. There's a 12-person support team from around the world, and we have 5 vehicles. So really, we're in a bit of luxury. We don't stay in the luxury. We stay in a lot of the places that we're helping to fundraise for. So, the big component of it is the fundraising thing.
Yep.
But the physical side is a massive one. So.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, to be selected as one of 12 on an international stage, that's pretty phenomenal. What did you have to go through in order to make the selection criteria?
Look, it's there's not really a tech sheet for it, but it's really the big part is that you've got a heart for the Unagawaja and what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
That you're not doing this for, I can tick this box and say Andy Steele did Unagawaja.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about spreading the word of Unagawaja and having a heart for what they do.
Yep.
So you go through, the selection process basically is there's a small thing that you type up, tell them a little bit about yourself. You do a 2-minute video about yourself, why you want to do it, what you think you have to offer. They have 2 interviews with you, 2 Skype calls. I have one from South Africa and one from London, so that they really understand that, one, you can physically do it,
mm-hmm.
2, you've got the mental capacity, and 3, you're going to help with the fundraising. So,
okay.
Yeah, look, before I even put my hand up, I'd spoken to them 12 months out and just found out a little bit about it. Would I be suitable for it? And what I needed to do to get ready to be selected. So I spent 8 months riding, because the riding was the thing that I needed to improve. And I did a lot of riding in the studio last year. I'm still doing it this year.
That's an indoor cycling studio.
Yeah, so you take your bike, you take the front wheel off, you
mm-hmm.
put it on a roller, and you have a heart rate monitor. There's 15 bike stations, a coach, and for an hour you go pretty hard.
Fantastic.
So all heart rate driven. So,
okay.
Yeah, so I did that till I was selected in September, and I've continued with that throughout. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And then maybe you can give us a little bit of an idea of what a typical week looks like as far as your training is concerned.
So look, I train 6 days a week. I always have 1 rest day. Recently, it's been 3 sessions in the bike studio,
mm-hmm.
1 strength session in the gym, usually a longer road ride at the weekend, so 100, 120 Ks.
Yep. And is that flat or hilly?
Hilly.
Yep.
Hilly. So last week I rode Mount Tambourine twice, so yeah, you're looking at 120 Ks and a 1300 meter climb.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of hills. I get on Mount Gravatt, I do 6-8 reps up Mount Gravatt. I'm getting on Cootha and just going up and down, up and down. So a lot of hill work to get used to what I've got to do on a daily basis on the 10 days.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And obviously you've got a fantastic base because you've got a strong background as an ultra runner, but how are you bringing the running training in there as well to prepare for Comrades?
Look, I did. I ran the Kepler Challenge, which is a 60K off-road run just before Christmas.
In New Zealand?
In New Zealand, yeah,
yep.
In the South Island. So I probably had 6 weeks before that where I did more running.
Mm-hmm.
I went down to Narang Forest, Nhumanbar, and got on the trails and just did a little bit more running and pulled back on the bike for that. At the moment, I'm still really very focused on the bike.
Sure.
But I still run once or twice a week.
Yeah.
And as we get closer to the event, I'll then bring more running in. And probably in the last 8 weeks, I'll spend less time on the bike apart from the studio, get off the road and out of danger, and start to do a little bit more running with, with the guys that are training for Comrades. So,
yeah, sure. You can see how that background as an ultra runner and having done Comrades multiple times, you know, we always talk about it in the running community, having that muscle memory. So you can see that really the training for this event, you can look at the training now and say, wow, that's phenomenal. But it's really been a culmination of, you know, many years, even a decade leading up to this very point, which is really exciting. Can you give us a little bit more information for our listeners about where the money that you're raising actually goes to as well?
Yeah, so the Inugawaja Charitable Trust assists, there's two schools that we raise money for, and we get to stay at one of the schools. There's a community called the Langer Community in the Cape area, which has a hockey cricket club and a school attached to it. And then there's the Vuka Benzenzi shelter, which helps with people who have fallen on hard times. And it provides them with a bed, and they help with the farming, the small community. And so they give back for their bed, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, look, it all goes into local. Most of it goes into education and empowering young people to change their lives. So.
Fantastic. And that's obviously something that you are really passionate about just through your charity work here as well with the Salvation Army and whatnot as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think when you're doing something and you're doing it for someone else, it's easier than when you're doing it for yourself. You're not running a marathon for yourself. So, and I've sort of got into the habit when I'm in the studio and I'm sweating, I'm sort of looking at the, particularly in summer, and looking at each drop and thinking, right, that's the face of a South African child that you're probably helping.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, if you can play games with your mind a little bit sometimes and not focus on your own discomfort or what you're going through, it makes it a whole lot easier to do these things. So,
fantastic. So, obviously we're nutritionists, so this podcast is very much about nutrition and well-being overall, but let's dive into a little bit around your nutrition strategy. Obviously, you know, you work with me as well, but maybe you can give our listeners some idea of even just what a day on a plate might look like for Andy.
So look, if I'm going out to do a really long run or ride, then I would always start with some food prior to going out. If it's just a 1 hour training session, I wouldn't take much before. I might take a hammer endurolite or something just as an electrolyte builder.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was going out for, you know, a 120 ride or a 3 hour run, then I would probably have 2 pieces of toast, some sort of hammer energy bar, and probably a banana or a piece of fruit and a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, look, it differs. And then if it was just a normal day, my breakfast is normally a cereal, a bowl of cereal, and then a piece of fruit. But coming back, if I've come in from a training session, I always start with a protein drink within 20 minutes of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's without fail.
Yeah.
I usually have a morning snack of carrots or eggs or some protein and a bit of, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Lunch is either salad, sandwich, but usually protein, cottage cheese, salmon.
Yep.
So yeah, look, I'm more focused on the protein side with the amount of exercise I'm doing and muscle recovery. I don't tend to do the afternoon snack too much.
Mm-hmm.
But by dinner time I'm usually pretty hungry, and it's usually a good sized meal. Vegetables, I'm not a red meat eater.
Yeah.
Chicken, fish, it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
I try and keep it pretty simple, because
mm-hmm.
I'm a pretty simple runner, so.
Yeah. And I think the message there for listeners is that, you know, sports nutrition really doesn't need to be complicated. You don't need to necessarily be buying bags of supplements for, you know, $100 a pop and, you know, chowing down on loads of powders or bars. You know, at the end of the day, real food is where you're going to get your nutrition from. We've sort of, you know, I have always, we're both passionate mm-hmm. about sort of that kind of intuitive side of eating as opposed to sitting down and counting calories, which is definitely something you're good at, Andy. You know, and we've definitely focused on just making sure that protein intake is adequate for you whilst the training has increased over the last couple of months. We're really passionate about research here at the Nourished Wrap. A really great book for any athletes that are listening is The Paleo Diet for Athletes, which is written by Lauren Cordain, primarily, who has a PhD. And, you know, I'd like to emphasize that it's the unsensationalized version of the paleo diet, which is essentially going back to real food. And, you know, if you look on page 72 of that particular book, she really talks about the importance of protein and how for a long time we've put a high emphasis on pumping carbohydrates into athletes. But at the end of the day, as it says in the book, carbohydrate in the diet is seldom a problem for athletes because it's so abundant, but we really need to make sure that athletes aren't falling into the trap of smashing through the carbs and forgetting their protein, which is ultimately going to help them restore, recover, help them maintain their neurotransmitter balance, help them with their hormonal health as well. And we've really kept it very simple with you, but that's been a big focus for us. So we actually talked about, in our last podcast, we talked a lot about health goals and realistic goal setting. And Jess, I know this is an area you're really passionate about.
Yeah, so, you know, doing all this high-intensity sort of exercise, ultramarathons, like, it's kind of hard for the everyday person to really comprehend, but I want to get a good insight, and I think it's valuable to the listeners, in how you structure your goal setting and what you do to make sure you attain that goal. What is some advice?
Well, I think having good people on your team is probably critical. Mm-hmm. So whether it's nutrition or in the gym or whatever you're doing, like-minded people who are on board, a running group, a cycling group, but people that really understand, you want positive people around you that are going to support you and help you get to where you want to go. Yeah. Because if you've got people that are challenging you, that's not helpful to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. So having the right team and people around you is absolutely critical. People that are going to question and challenge me and say I'm crazy, that's fine. Just look in the newspaper after or wherever and see that it's been done.
Yeah.
But don't challenge me before I'm doing it, because you're undermining what I've really made a decision to do. And I've done a lot of research before I've done that. I've talked to people in South Africa, said, hey, am I capable of doing this? I've talked to people here. What do I need to do? So I've really spent some time checking all of that out. Now, it then comes down to, I spent a lot of time riding because I knew that I wasn't up to the riding part, and that was going to be my challenge. Mm-hmm. And I got people on board to help me with that. Mm-hmm.
To give people an idea, Andy, where did you start with your riding? You know, we're talking about doing 17 kilometres in 10 days. Where were you? 1,700 kilometres in 10 days.
Yeah.
Where were you, say, a year ago with your riding?
Look, I hadn't ridden much with groups. I'd my bike used to come out when I got injured. I'd ride probably once every 10 days.
And how far were your rides at that point?
Not very far. I could ride 40 k's or something. And when I made the decision on the 1st of January in 2017 that I was going to aim and target for Unagawaja in 2018, I went out on New Year's Day and rode 60 k's. So, yeah. And then just slowly built up from that. So I think it's also important that you don't go out and overdo it. I think a lot of people will say, okay, I'm going to get fit, I'm going to go to the gym. And all of a sudden, they've gone from 0 to 100.
Yeah.
And they're in the gym 5 days a week, 6 days, 7 days, doing double sessions.
Mm.
The same with running, the same with biking. And it's a very, very easy way to burn out or get injuries.
Yeah.
So, look, I always think that you don't raise your distance or intensity by more than 10% a week. Mm-hmm. So, but, look, once I got serious about doing the bike, I upped it a fair amount. I then found the studio. Told them what I was aiming to do,
yeah.
And started riding in the studio with guys that knew what they were doing. So
okay.
It was a huge climb up from where I was.
Yeah.
Massive climb up. Yeah.
but it still gives people that, you know, I guess, inspiration that, you know, you can really start from a social rider or, you know, maybe a 5 kilometer park run to, well, actually running a marathon is a possibility.
If you can run a 5 kilometer park run, you can run a marathon. You need to put yourself around people that have done it and are going to convince you you can do it. You've got to want to do it. No one can give you the want to do it. If you want to do it, you'll get to do it. If you're really serious about doing these things, whatever that happens to be. I think the important thing is not that the goal needs to be huge, but that you need to have a goal, that you need to do something. You know, I'm in an age bracket where people think, you know, playing with the TV controller is a sport at 60 plus, and I just haven't got time for that.
Yeah.
So, look, I like to challenge myself and feel that there's still a lot of challenges I can do. The Salvation Army are looking at a bike ride coming back from Sydney to Brisbane to raise funds for some of the work I'm doing later in the year. So, you know, that'll be the next one. So.
Yeah.
As long as my wife's not listening to this podcast.
Another thing I want to touch on, you brought up challenging yourself and things like that. What is some advice in when you feel very challenged and out of your comfort zone? How do you overcome that specific moment, you know, to make sure that you do put yourself out there?
Yeah, look, I think if you can be very mindful and very much in the moment and think about the big goal, you know, this is uncomfortable, this is a challenge, but I can get through this. You know, another 5, 10, 15 minutes or whatever, I'm in a better space. So stay right in that moment, work through it, and then you're in a better stage, you're fine. And then the bad one comes and work through it.
Mm-hmm.
Mindfulness is such an important thing. If I'm in an event or a race, a marathon, I know exactly what kilometre I'm in. I'm in 26 to 27, mm-hmm. I'm in 10 to 11. So I'm not thinking, oh gosh, I've got 30 Ks to do.
Mm.
Oh, what are we doing tomorrow?
Yeah.
How are we celebrating? Whatever.
Mm.
I'm trying to stay right in that one moment. It's not easy. And then you bring that back to a daily basis.
Yeah.
So, okay, so there's a red car in front of me. I'm at the lights. There's 3 cars that way. Just stay where you are.
Yeah.
Stay right where you are. It's a hard, hard challenge. And I certainly haven't got it beaten.
Yeah.
But I work and work and work.
Yeah.
So
being present.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when I did Trail Walker, the 100 in June, that was a big shift for me in my training, that when we were going out doing 35Ks, I wasn't thinking, oh my gosh, I'm at 10K, I've got 25 to go. I would just be like, oh gee, it's a beautiful day, it's stunning here, my body's feeling good. And then you don't play those mind games of, oh my gosh, how am I going to get through the next 25? So I think that's fantastic that you've sort of brought that up. I think the
longer the event, the bigger the event, the bigger the challenge. And the challenge is not physically most times. The challenge is with the mind.
Mm-hmm.
The mind, with the little chatter and what goes on with all of us,
mm-hmm.
Is a challenge we all have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how we try and overcome that challenge or work within that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we can control the mind, the body will follow.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't, the body will fall apart every time. So, yeah, look, it can become a little bit dangerous when you're in endurance events, because I think I could probably just about finish with a broken leg. But so, yeah, you have to be careful, you know, and the last Comrades, I was injured and trained right through injured and finished it and did it. But then I had 6 months off, and it's the first time I've ever done that. But, yeah, one needs to be a little bit careful.
Yeah.
And I
guess that's where people on board as part of your team. So I go to an osteopath every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I go do Pilates. I get massage.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of other things that I do other than just get on the bike or in the gym or run.
That's self-care, isn't it?
Yeah. And the nutrition is part of the self-care.
Absolutely.
It has to be, because the fuel, you can't expect the body to run on rubbish fuel or the wrong fuel.
Exactly.
So, but you do get to know your body, and you do get to know, you know, when you need some more food or that's not quite working or and that's where you've helped me, Katie, with that. So we tinker with it and we look at it. So.
Yeah. And I think you've structured your training so well, with this particular challenge because you've done those kind of like three heavier weeks and then backed off a little bit.
Yep.
So you're remembering your recovery.
Yep.
You're sleeping well.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Which is great. Obviously, you don't have as much stress now because of you're retired.
Yeah.
Yep. I wanted to touch a little bit on supplements, Andy, and just predisclose this by saying this isn't individual advice, but you know, Andy probably comes in once a month and sees me. So maybe you could give the listeners a bit of an idea of what you're taking, and I'll sort of explain why. Perhaps.
Well, we've really only always kept it to two or three.
Yep.
Supplements, so it's never more than three supplements. I'm not going to chemist shops and just buying this and that because I think I might need it.
Mm.
So yeah,
and you've had a background, sorry, but
yeah.
You've had a background, haven't you, where you sort of came to me and almost bought in a shopping bag, and
yeah.
I said, well, what are these supplements doing, how do you feel, and we've worked through, well, what do you really need?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And we've looked at blood tests.
Yep.
So we've looked and we've got some more detailed blood tests so that you can hone in on things.
Yeah.
So look, I mean, it's really your call, and we look at how things are working.
Yeah.
The magnesium was one thing. The we've done probiotics.
Yeah, we're doing a pretty high dose magnesium at the moment to help your recovery.
Yeah.
And one of those formulas has got those B vitamins in it as well, just to support the extra demands on your energy cycle.
Mm.
And we've got you on some high dose fish oil at the
yep.
moment just
yep.
to help with the inflammation
yep.
and your recovery. And then I've just recently, I think we've just put you back on some immune support just as a preventative.
That's it. Yep.
Because obviously, you know, the immune system is under a little bit more stress with the
yep.
amount of physical activity, and we want to stop you from getting sick so that you don't have to you know, compromise your training or anything like that.
And touch wood, that has been, you know, for the last, yeah, it's almost 12 months that I've really raised the intensity of the training. And I think I've had one sinus infection. I had no colds, no flu last year, nothing. So,
yeah.
And I think sometimes you listen to your body, and yes, whilst you train six times a week, there are times when you've had a particularly tough week or two sessions or anything, I'm just too tired, so
mm-hmm.
I'll have a rest up.
Yeah,
It's nothing for me. Occasionally, you have a 20-minute kip in the afternoon if I've had a really tough few days. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, look, I listen to my body. My body tells me when it can go and when it can't. And yeah, I'm pretty tuned in. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things we have struggled a little bit with you is getting your electrolytes right. You are a fairly heavy sweater.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I think going with the heavy hammer things over the Endurolytes over the summer.
Yep,
they're the
high sodium.
The high sodium ones.
Yeah.
Appears to have been working.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Tailwind has worked as a good drinking one. So
yep.
Yeah.
So Tailwind, when you're actually out on a long session,
yep.
At what point do you actually bring fuel with you? So would it be a two-hour session, three-hour session?
Usually every an hour and a half that I'll take fuel. For an hour, I might carry, in summer I'll carry a drink bottle, and usually with some Tailwind in it,
mm-hmm.
even up to an hour, because of just when it's so hot.
Absolutely.
But during the rest of the year, I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But over an hour, I would definitely... if I'm doing an off-road run, I'd have a bladder and some supplements to go with it. So yeah.
And say, for example, when you're out on Mount Tambourine doing those loops,
yeah.
what would you sort of use to support yourself during those rides?
Look, I'll probably take a Hammer energy bar.
Yeah.
I'll have two bottles with me, and then I have some of the Endurolite capsules as
yeah.
well, and probably one gel.
Okay.
So yeah. So but I look at it over an hour.
Yep.
I tend to look at it each hour.
Sure.
That I need something.
Yeah.
Particularly in the heat. So.
And those rides are taking you about how long?
We rode 120 km the other day. It was four and a half.
Yeah.
Four and a half hours. So yeah, four plus hours. And it it's starting to get hot, but we try and get out at 4 o'clock in the morning and get early. So
for the benefit of the listeners, we're really talking about fueling on probably only about 50 grams of carbohydrate there at max per hour in Brisbane heat in January. So, you know, I think we've had a bit of an over-sensationalization of the whole concept of fat adaption, which really is about going back to real food and not having to rely on excessive glucose during a training session. And really, 50 grams is definitely an indication that Andy's metabolism is flexible. He's able to tap into those stored fat reserves during those endurance sessions. But I think perhaps we are getting to a point where people are starting to take that to an extreme. Andy's somebody who really has that balance right. So enough to support his body, enough so that he's definitely getting a little bit of glucose in, getting those electrolytes in, being intuitive about it, but certainly we're not chugging back, 500 or 600 calories per hour just because he's riding on high glucose. And Tim Noakes has done some extensive work around fat adaption, so he's a good reference if you've got an interest in that. But I definitely encourage people to see a practitioner if that's an interest to them, because it can be stressful for the body if it's done incorrectly.
Look, I get to know when it needs some food, and certainly when I've had a very hard session, I'm looking at my functions basically when I come back. You know that you need to get a lot of fluid on board if it's been a hot day and a long session, and you just keep pumping some fluids back in until you've rehydrated basically. So I'll use Hydrolite and things like that.
Fantastic.
To get back, you know, what I need to put back on board. And look, that you keep an eye on your own colour and those sort of things to see. That's a bit of a worry. But usually by lunchtime it's all clear and you're moving forward.
Fantastic. So, did you have any other questions for Andy, Jess?
I guess, like, after those big intense training sessions and everything like that, you fuel yourself during the sessions, but afterwards, what are you eating? Is there a regime around that? Like,
not really, no. I mean, often I think the longer the training, I find over 4 or 5 hours, the body gets tuned up a fair bit, mm-hmm. and you're not usually as hungry as people would think you are. You need to get a lot of fluids back on board, but often it can take a few hours before the body's settled. I tend to put simple fruits on board.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fluids back on board, but it can sometimes take a few hours before the body's ready to take much on board.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think you give it a good work over when you get over 4 and 5 hours, and it takes a little bit of time to get something on. I always have a protein drink or some sort of protein or a protein bar or something.
Yeah.
As soon as I've finished within that 20 minutes, that's just a go-to all the time. So,
yep. And we've talked about that training set you've got coming up in New Zealand and just making sure that, you know, if you're not going to eat for a couple of hours because you're not up to it, just getting some protein in straight away and a portable carbohydrate in the form of a fruit or something.
Very important, yeah. All right. Well, if we've got nothing else to kind of go through, I think we could wrap up today. It was really interesting to have you on the show, Andy. Thank you so much again.
Yeah, that was an awesome session, Andy.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. And if anybody is interested in Andy's journey, please make sure that you find him through social media.
Yeah.
Just under Andy Steele on Facebook.
Yep.
And you can donate. We'll be putting the link to the donation page in the show notes for today, so please show Andy some support for the amazing feat that he's conquering in the next couple of months.
And on that, we just want to close with our 5 core values of the Nourish Wrap podcast, and that's moving every day in an enjoyable way, eating whole foods most of the time, sleeping well, switching off every day, and also tuning into your own body.
And they're five things that, like, we've just exemplified absolutely perfectly with Andy's, like, a model athlete,
exactly.
Really.
And a lot of your advice was so easily applicable to an everyday person, I found. So.
Yeah,
for sure.
Thank you so much for joining us, guys. Please subscribe to our channel if you enjoyed the episode. Any content ideas, shoot through to us, and we'll be back in a fortnight's time. Thank you.
Bye.